This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
We're going to finish up this hour with staff writer Rafi Khachdourian, who spent a lot of time this spring with a scientist named Slava Epstein, who is dedicated to the search for new forms of life. So, Rafi, you've done this big article about bacteria, and I was surprised to learn from you that bacteria on Earth, wait for it, weighs much more than all the people on the Earth, hundreds of billions of pounds of bacteria, which is, I have to say, kind of gross.
Well, it's gross if you think about it, but, you know, bacteria are, we think of them as being like kind of the archetype of the horror movie. They invade our body and they cause us to be ill. But if you set that aside, and the sense of grossness really begins to vanish, because bacteria were here for 2 billion years before macroscopic life emerged, our own sort of multicellular life, and they very much set the conditions of life on this planet. And yet at the same time, we know incredibly little about them. They have eluded systematic scientific study to a surprising extent. And a couple of months ago, I went to go visit a scientist who's been obsessed with this problem. And his name is Slava Epstein, and he is a professor at Northeastern University.
An illustration of our ignorance is this. If you take a textbook and you eliminate 99% of the words and you leave 1% of randomly distributed words on the page, how much will that book tell you? Well, that's about how much we know about the microorganisms on our planet, about 1%. We are wonderfully ignorant, and I'm saying wonderfully because it gives you not only a challenge, but also an immense opportunity.
So Slava Epstein is at Northeastern University, but Rafi, I don't think that's a Boston accent.
Not unless there's a city in the former Soviet Union that's called Boston. Now, he's from Russia, and he grew up in Moscow at a time when the space race was very active between the United States and the Soviet Union, and he was very passionate about going into astronomy. But Slava is half Jewish, and at that time there were quotas limiting Jews in academia, and so his family and teachers really discouraged him from pursuing that dream.
I was told when I was a kid that under no circumstances I was supposed to follow a career in anything related to physics or math. Physics and math were perceived as closer to national secrets or whatever, stupid as it might have been, but that's the way it was perceived. And the quota on Jews in those areas was much more strict than in some other fields like biology.
So, David, in fact, he did take up biology. And here for me was a very poignant part of the story because he had switched careers. But because his social milieu was filled with sort of dissident students, he was once again told that he wouldn't really be able to advance in that career. And so he basically eventually was able to find a job 10 time zones away in Kamchatka. And ultimately, as the Soviet Union was falling to pieces, was able to emigrate to the United States. He sort of had a typical immigrant story. He didn't really speak the language, and he didn't really know many people. But Slava is a charismatic guy, and he found some people to support him and eventually landed at Northeastern University.
And he dives into a particular problem, right?
Yes. He becomes curious about this problem called the Great Plate Count Anomaly.
What is that?
Yeah, it's a mouthful. It almost sounds like a geological problem. Basically, if you want to study microbes, what you need to do is you need to get a pure colony in a Petri dish. They're incredibly small, and the way microbes reproduce is that they kind of divide and replicate. And so you need to get enough of them so you can figure out how they behave. And almost since sort of the dawn of microbiology, scientists have realized that if you do this, if you put them in some kind of nutrient-rich medium, only a tiny fraction, some say even maybe less than 1%, will grow. These are basically the microbial versions of weeds. And for more than a century, it's been a baffling problem. Scientists have not been able to figure out how to get the rest of microbial life to grow, particularly
and
bacteria.
What are the implications of that? Why would we want that to happen, and what would it possibly indicate of great practical and scientific use?
So since humanity has been cultivating bacteria, there have been huge, huge benefits, especially in antibiotics. Almost every antibiotic in modern medicine is derived from bacteria. But here's the thing. Beginning in the 1980s, scientists began to realize that the 1% of bacterial life that had been such a bountiful resource for medicines, they had basically tapped it out. And so as a resource for antibiotic discovery, the rest of the microbial world was closed off to them.
Inaccessible.
And this is at a time when they're also noticing the rise of superbugs, of pathogens that are resistant to the medical arsenal that we already have.
Biologists have known about this problem for a hell of a long time. How did Slava Epstein approach it differently than everybody else?
Slava is a microbial ecologist, and ecologists tend to view the biological world as a kind of system of interdependence. And I think once you start looking at especially microbial life in that way, you come to realize that the conventional method to cultivate bacteria, to take one organism, isolate it, put it on a Petri dish and see if it will grow, just begins to look a little odd. And what Slava realized was that if you could shift your perspective a little bit, if you could try and grow bacteria where they are, you could do that anywhere. You could do it in Greenland and Antarctica, or even in his own backyard.
It's a backyard like any other backyard. A few thousand square feet land. There is nothing particular about it. So I'm holding this what amounts to a few grams of soil, and this is a few billion cells, tens of thousands if not millions of species, all involved into fighting, collaborating, cooperating, signaling, talking with each other. And as they do so, they produce compounds we find very useful in our life. Because at concentrations high enough, they become new antibiotics. And it's all in these couple of grams of soil. So if we knew how to grow all the organisms from it, it would probably keep the drug industry going for years, just from a couple of grams.
Slava began this effort to try and cultivate bacteria in the soil in the 1990s with a colleague. His name is Kim Lewis. And their first plan, David, was a disaster. The basic problem was that they had put the microbes into these little containers that had kind of these porous membranes. And it turned out that the microbes loved to eat that porous membrane, and they were breaking out of jail, essentially.
Damnable microbes.
Yeah. Right. And so eventually, in a moment of frustration after choosing a new membrane but being unable to sort of build an appropriate container for them, Slava went to go see Kim Lewis at his office, which was then at Tufts University, and they vowed to figure out the solution to the problem that evening.
I remember in his office, he stands up, closes the door, and says, "Slava, we're not leaving. Really, we're not leaving until we come up with something, because we have to." I agreed with him, but the problem was that I only had 40 minutes, because in 40 minutes I had to go. I had to go because I was supposed to meet in the evening for a night out with my wife, who would not tolerate my being late. That was the challenge. I had 40 minutes, and we had to come up with something.
Because you had a date.
Because I had a date with my wife. And that refi worked. When you have to, you do.
Now, David, I don't know if you've seen the movie Hudsucker Proxy, but
I have. In
that movie, there's a running gag where different innovations are being designed, and the blueprints for those are basically just a circle on graph paper. So one is the hula hoop, and another is the straw. And the thing that Slava and Kim Lewis came up with could have just been one of those items, because it was basically just a metal washer. And they glued their membranes to either side of the metal washer, and the space in the middle was a perfect little container for bacteria to thrive in.
And they got it done in 40 minutes, and he had his date with his wife.
And he had his date for his wife, yeah. So basically, within a week of inventing this device, Slava was out on the Massachusetts Bay testing it out in marine sediment on the shore, and they were able to cultivate new forms of life.
That's amazing. That's a number of years ago now. What's happened since?
Well, in 2003, Slava and Kim formed a company that's called Novobiotic, and it was basically a way to channel their efforts to use this kind of technology to discover medications, primarily antibiotics. And in that time, I should say, Slava tinkered with the technology and kind of really advanced it. One form which has gotten some attention is called the iChip, but they're really just iterations of the same idea. A container for microbes that allows chemicals to flow in and out of the environment. So bacteria basically stay in their native soil, completely unaware that they're being studied.
So these new antibiotics, what do they fight against? How are they helping us out?
They have found about 30 promising candidate drugs, let's call them. And last year, they announced two with very unique properties. One of those drugs, called Texobactin, interferes with the cell wall of many sort of well-known pathogens, multi-drug-resistant tuberculosis, staph infections, and basically causes the pathogen to explode.
And we're still in the research stage?
Yes, we are still in the research stage. It's sort of the early drug development stage. They have a peer-reviewed paper on it, and they have proven efficacy in small animals, and now they've kind of got to take the next series of steps to get to clinical trials.
So in a way, this is a guy who started out wanting to see the stars, and he ends up discovering this whole new microscopic world.
Yeah. Slava has a wonderful wandering intellect. And one afternoon during my visit to see him, he kind of gleefully put in front of me a raft of papers that contained designs for a device that he calls Gulliver, which would be a sort of mobile robotic lab that could isolate and study bacteria all on its own. It's an upgrade to the iChip idea, and it's still theoretical, but he's got big plans for it.
My true hope is that if that device pans out, and I have no reason to believe it won't, when it does, we may be able to use it at the bottom of the ocean. We may be able to use it under ice in Greenland. But even more so, we will be able to use it and study microbial life on Mars or on Europa, where microbiologists are not going to be anytime soon, but Gulliver hopefully will.
Slava Epstein of Northeastern University. He spoke with The New Yorker's Rafi Khachdourian, and you can find Rafi's article, The Unseen, at newyorkerradio.org.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.